Welcome back to another episode of the Devil's Party, Chaucer edition.
Chaucer edition.
And today, very excitingly, we're discussing the Wife of Bath from the general prologue.
Yeah, the Wife of Bath has far and away the largest actual prologue to her tale. It dwarfs the tale about 800 lines, which is, you know, a book of Paradise Lost. And her tale is much shorter. It's quite interesting, her tale, too.
800 lines is a prologue.
Her own prologue. We should maybe sort of think about that for a future.
We should. Mm. We'll do fastest first.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes, that's on there. So, now a little test.
Oh no. Peter. I was up seven, not five, six, but seven times last night.
Oh, God, really?
Every hour in the hour. Oh, no. Yes, oh, test me.
A goldwife was there of Bessie de Bath. A goldwife. Now, why is it a goldwife and not a goldowife?
Because there's only one of them.
Well, yeah, that's true. But also because it's indefinite, and therefore it's the strong form. If it were definite, it would be the goldowife.
Ah.
So there are two reasons why that varies. One is
damn it,
plurality. But the other.
Okay.
Well, you're quite right there. Goldowivers would, of course, have a. Yeah, schwa in the end.
A schwa, that's it.
It's a shame we've lost all these little inflections. They were fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I tell Sophie, you know, I'm shaking her knee, now I think of it differently.
So, a wife is.
A wife?
Well, yeah, but it doesn't exactly mean wife. It means woman, mature woman.
Ah. Yeah. Kind of like our version just meant young lady, and then we have the whole Virgin Mother of Jesus.
That's right. Or maid, you know. With a ghost, though, fair maid.
Yeah.
You're not really inquiring into her sexual status. You know.
Just young lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hopefully virgin for her time. Yeah.
We all politely assume it, anyway.
Yeah, okay. And then wife.
Well, wife, in Old English, there are three words for woman. You're probably familiar with it, eh?
No.
Well, one is masculine, one's neuter, and one's feminine. So it shows how crazy the gender system is.
Okay, hit me.
So, well, the feminine word is quen.
Yes.
And quen is, of course, related to Greek gune.
Which is where we get...
gynecology.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it also gives us...
other well, terms.
It gives us also the less savoury term for... the female pudendum.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we have wife.
Okay.
Now, wife is a word that is also related to anything that is mobile or flappy, like wave, whip. It's related to all
it's
those
like you've
terms.
Done your childbearing, you're flappy now. Is that what that's... Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? This goes back... You're going back thousands of years into deep... history with these etymologies. But yeah. But then there's also the word man, which genuinely meant human being.
What was the word man?
Man. Which you give us the modern man. The modern reflex is man.
Instead of wir, weir. Yeah, okay.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
But weir meant a man with testicles. Whereas weef could, well, a quen was, of course, a man with.
Without testicles.
Without testicles.
Right. So there's still a spectrum of possibility there.
Well, she was saying with more positive attributes. With a uterus. Give it that. So in fact, it would have been a perfect system for nowadays. Because there were no...
Right.
The word man had no gender implications whatever.
Clever.
So if you wanted to specify, you said, were man for chap. Or werman. And that word has died out now.
Like how we have werewolf.
Well, werewolf is the only reflex of that word for man.
That's cool.
Isn't that amazing?
The
only reflex left.
Okay.
And of course, words like virtue are coming through Latin, although they're related, obviously. And a woman was a wifman. A wifman. That's why man is shared by man and woman. But originally, it was a genuine sharing of a neutral... It means the creature that thinks. It's related to mind.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
We've all learned something today.
Yeah.
See? If I go on to Baby Bounce... It would have missed out.
The trouble is that what's happened to those words is a sad indictment of inbuilt systematic patriarchy.
Yeah, you've been saying I've started to understand that schooling and the way you're taught language is just like steadfast.
Well, it goes
structure. What we've imposed that on almost.
Oh, yeah. Well, the system of patriarchy has imposed it, isn't it? It's got way beyond schooling, you know, because we learn a word like woman and man very early on, and we think of man as prior and woman as secondary. It's how language works. You know, we never say how shallow is the pool. We say how deep is the pool, even if it's shallow, because we prioritize one of a binary pair, and we use.
You always say man and woman.
Yeah,
you say woman and man because it sounds weird.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Or you have, you know, awful terms like, they used to talk about poetesses, and a poetess has to be inferior to a poet.
Yes,
yeah, a poetess is clearly, you know.
Authoress,
yes, yeah. Is not to be taken seriously.
Yeah. Okay.
And luckily those words have kind of died out, I think.
Yeah, have been killed off by third wave feminism.
Well, that's right.
Gotten the jugular, yeah.
That's right. But yeah. So, a good wee was that we see the bath. We got to the first line.
No, we normally take longer, you're fine.
So she's living next to Bath, the city in the West Country. No, not yet associated with Jane Austen, you'll be surprised. But of course, long associated with the Romans and the lovely. Have you been to Bath?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah. The
terrible water.
The waters. Yes. But she was somedale deaf, and that was scarth. But she was a little bit deaf, and that was a pity. Again, here's Jeff with his random observations like a magpie. Leaving you to sort out what that means. I think it's possible to relate her deafness to her personality. I mean, it's
like selective deafness.
Yeah, like remember Mrs. Richards in
Yes. What were you expecting to see? The Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Majestic herds of wildebeest crossing the Serengeti.
Talking. You can see the sea. It's over there between the land and the sky.
That's
yes.
Exactly right. So it can connote a certain degree of kind of egotism more.
Okay.
Of cloth marking she had a switch and horn, she passed them of Ypres and of gold. So she's a cloth maker, a weaver. And she's better than those of Ypres and Gand, you know, in northern
Belgium.
Well, Belgium
Ypres
wasn't really Belgium then, of course.
Well, yeah, Normandy.
No. Normandy's a bit further left.
Their borders that are
And okay. Ghent. Remember Browning? How they brought the good news from Aix to Ghent?
Ah, okay.
I sprang to the spirit. I sprang to the stirrups, yes. So she's... Then this was the centre. Basically, England in these days wasn't much of a manufacturing economy.
No.
It had lots and lots of sheep. It was a bit like Australia in the 19th century. Lots of sheep.
Okay.
Lots of wool. But it sent it abroad to be made and finished and so on.
Done with, yep.
But she's as good as or better than. So
she's using the wool here.
She's using the wool here. She's a kind of economic nationalist. Those terms, of course, wouldn't mean anything then. But
she's a remainer. Wool shall remain.
That's right. In all the parish weef, there was the known that to the offering before here should gone. So the offering is sacrifice, you know, the Eucharist and so on. And there's nobody, no wife in the parish dares precede her in this.
Oh.
Yeah. So she's got precedence. She's at the top of the pecking order.
Okay. Yep.
And if they did, the certain so wroth was she that she was out of all charity.
Ooh.
Yeah, she was out of all charity, which of course is it means she gets cross and grumpy. And of course it's a lovely irony because it's all about charity and love, you know, the offering.
Yeah, so
she demands on being the first there. So she's kind of turning the whole thing on its head.
Because now it's subject to humanity.
Well,
yeah. Well, human pettiness.
Yeah. And of course, behind that is a very general, profound idea that all sin drives out charity. We find this in Spencer a lot too.
Yeah.
So every kind of sin makes you love your neighbour less, and or it arises for a failure to love your neighbour, your fellow human being.
Mm.
So, you know, gluttony is an obvious restriction on charity, but envy, wrath, pride, all of them, they all work against charity.
Mm.
The fundamental command, first of all, you have to love God, then you have to love your neighbour as yourself.
Because charity is about seeing other people as human, and yes. sinfulness is
yes.
denying them their humanity for your own.
Yes, using them as things.
Like, when you take away the Christian elements of these things, they're very good ways of understanding the way humans relate to each other.
Oh, well, the heart of Christianity is an excellent kind of ethical system, which says treat other people
as if they were human.
Yeah, as if they were
human. It's like, you want to be treated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not too amazing.
Not
a brain stretcher. But of course, the trouble is that most people call themselves Christians. Apologies to any such. But I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're used to it.
I have no time for the ethical heart of Christianity.
Yeah, it's all about.
It's all about
ticking boxes.
Well, it's all about a kind of rigid conservatism.
Yeah,
the desire to denounce others for being different.
Yeah, only helping yourselves, like the community, rather than that's
right.
very human. Like you
hating immigrants. Oh yeah, hating outside. That's all evolutionary
psychology.
Yeah, makes sense, but it's nothing to do with Christianity.
No.
The whole idea of Christ is he goes off and dines with publicans and sinners.
Yeah.
And the Good Samaritan. Because remember, when Christ says, you know, that's your duty to love your neighbour as yourself, somebody in the crowd says, excuse me, sir, who is my neighbour?
Mm.
And he tells the story of the Good Samaritan.
Yep.
Who helps the man who's been bound and bleeding. Even though the Samaritan is an outcast, he's... In that society, he is a Jew or a coloured person or something. He is not respected or taken seriously. He helps another person because it's another human being.
Mm.
And that's the only reason.
Mm.
So that explains beautifully what love your neighbour means. So there's a little surface joke here, but there's also a kind of a deeper resonance, I think, in this thing.
Quite.
Yeah,
clever.
Yeah. And then, again, his random eye picks on her coverchiefs, which are, you know, the stuff she wears in her head.
Mm-hmm.
Fulfina were a grund. They're obviously very expensive and very finely made. I dorst swear they wired in 10 pound. 10 pound. £10.
I do swear they were worth £10.
No. They weighed.
They weighed ten pounds.
Very heavy.
Wobbling around.
That's right. Well, For non-imperial persons, that's 4.5 kilos.
Jesus, so he was over 10 pounds. No, 3.9, just under 10 pounds.
Oh, right.
Jesus. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, exactly. That on a Sunday, wearing upon her head. So again, on a Sunday, Jeff doesn't notice, but it's particularly inappropriate to go in for display of wealth and attractiveness and so on a Sunday.
Yeah.
That's the one day, well... You should perhaps.
It's funny because, you know, your Sunday best. You wear your best to church.
Yes.
But you shouldn't be wearing your Gucci.
No, exactly.
Armani, whatever to church. Yeah.
Yeah, just not Lensing look slovenly, on. Basically. Is
yeah.
the idea.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Clean up a bit.
Yeah, clean up a bit.
Use your soap this day.
Exactly.
It's soap day, everyone.
Yes.
Soap day Sunday.
Her hosen wearing of fine scarlet red. So her hose, her tights, her stockings, whatever they are. I'm not intimate with the system of medieval female dressing.
Neither am I.
No. But obviously, stuff she wears on her legs of fine scarlet red.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we think immediately of...
The Whore of Babylon?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Scarlet Woman of Revelation.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you don't immediately think of that, folks, that's okay, but I've been trained. I've been worshipping at the altar. Yeah.
Who carries a cup full of the filthiness of her fornication.
Is that Spencer or just...
No, that's
in
Revelation.
The Bible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think Spencer refers to the filthiness of her fornication.
I've forgotten whether it's you, Spencer, or the Bible. Yeah. So they kind of merge.
Well, you couldn't make that scan, could you? The filthiness.
I didn't know if it was a variation on it. But yeah, okay, cool.
And what that means, I don't even want to know. Bold was her face, and fire and red of hue. So she is, her face is red, which means she is sanguine.
Be bold.
And not too bold. Exactly. She's bold. Bold in a way that, of course, medieval
women were not meant to be.
Yes, that's right. So she's a bit of a rebel. She's actually a very interesting figure, yes. The wife of Bath. If we ever do get round to her long prologue, she talks about her five husbands, you know, and she's, you know, that idea that you're supposed to be faithful to your dead husband. You've got no time for that. Bollocks, she says. Without another company in youth, says Chaucer delicately. But one of her last husband is a scholar, he's a clerk. And he's got lots of books of ancient, you know, wisdom, where he's always banging on about, well, anti-feminism, because it's a staple of Christian thought, anti-feminist rhetoric, going right back to the distortion
of St. Paul and Augustine.
Well, except it's not St. Paul, remember?
Okay. Yeah, it's a distortion of St. Paul.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It's people misreading and misunderstanding.
And the blatant distortion of Genesis.
Well, yes. That's a given. A talking snake.
It's hair-raising. No wonder they didn't want people to read in the native language.
Yeah, fair.
You know, use a bit of judgment. God. So, anyway. So, he's full of stories of wicked women and Jezebel. And she gets a bit, you know, jacked off with this, as you can imagine.
Does she murder him?
No, but she seizes his book and chucks it on the fire.
I love her. Yes,
books were so expensive.
It's much worse than smashing a PlayStation these days.
Exactly. It's taking a sledgehammer to his Porsche.
Yeah, good on her.
And then she...
Sorry, go on.
Then she goes on to explain that, of course, these books are written by... are full of slanders against women because they're written by celibate scholars, not by women. You know, women haven't had a voice here. She's like actually a kind of feminist.
Yes, no doubt.
She's an amazing figure. She's great.
The image of her throwing the book on the fire, is that the same as the, you know, the image of a woman smashing a Porsche now? Like, it would be kind of like, oh, you're a hysterical lady, but... Like, is it like that to the the unfit reader, and then the fit reader sees the underneath, or is it just straight to the fit reading?
Well, I suppose you're right. I mean, it could be construed in that way. And again, you've always got the unfit reader, haven't you?
Yeah, it's interesting.
The unfit audience. That's a very interesting point.
So have people read her as a hysterical, crazy lady a little bit?
Oh, well, the trouble is that scholarship has been infected by patriarchy.
Woo!
Particularly Victorian, Edwardian, early 20th century scholarship. So, yeah, I think it's probably on the whole. She hasn't been admired.
Some people view her as hysterical, crazy lady who doesn't know her place.
Yes.
Right. But the reality is that she is a very intelligent, feminist lady.
Exactly. And she knows what's what, and she can see what's going on.
He fights back. Good on her.
Yeah,
all
fights
right.
back.
Cool.
That's exactly right. Now, you see, the thing about smashing the Porsche is, it could be seen as just spite or something, but it's a meaningful act to burn a book.
Well, yes, yeah. I was trying to think of something equivalent.
What you're saying is this book is full of lies, and I don't want any of it, you know.
Right, so it would be now, like, I don't know, burning down the Houses of Parliament or something.
Yeah. It's certainly, yes.
I don't know, something more symbolic than smashing a Porsche for today, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. So she's a great figure.
Yeah.
So her face is bold and fair. She's very attractive. And... because it can't mean fair, light-coloured, because it's also red. So we know that he's talking about her. But, you know, she's kind of beautiful. And sanguine is a kind of powerful. It's, you know, the more... You know that... have we talked about the Hebrews? We have,
we did we? Last week.
We did last week, good.
Yeah.
So if you're an aristocrat, you're born sanguine, and you migrate, as you grow older, into one of the other three less desirable temperaments, phlegmatic, melancholic, choleric. And if you're a peasant, you're probably born phlegmatic or choleric.
Yum.
Yeah, well, exactly. So she's almost kind of like a natural aristocrat in that sense, you know.
God, chosen by God, would have had.
Yeah, so yeah, that's that, yeah. Her hosen, yes, are full straighty tied, and shows full moist and new. Her hosen were straightly tied. I saw it tightly fastened. Again, I couldn't tell you much about how you fasten a woman's hosiery in 14th century. It would be weird if I could.
It would. Well, I mean, well, everyone. What do you say? Chacasson. That's it.
But clearly, she's well off and she's not afraid to display it. Her shoes, full moist and new.
And that's something else that you can read fitly or unfitly.
Well, that's right.
It's like, oh, this showy whore of a lady or this proud, you know, well-dressed woman.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Who's looking after herself.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is the thing, isn't it? Because what you're the patriarchal reader is always going to shove her back in that box.
Woman, bad.
That's right. That's right. Yes, and bolshy woman. Doubly bad.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, fit woman who knows it as well.
Yeah.
It's all good to be pretty, but if you're pretty and you know it, well.
Exactly. Exactly. Again, all great poets are a bit like this, you know. They see beyond these ridiculous little confining ideologies. They see that, you know, men and women are both human beings. And as we've said, that's actually at the very heart of Christianity, even though most of Christian history has tried to obscure that. Certainly. Certainly with Christ's own sayings and in terms of original Christianity. And the way...
People were people.
People were people. And God was represented to... Well, it's really up to Constantine.
Ah.
What?
I mean, everything.
Oh, everything, yeah, I know. But, you know, the representations of God, murals, paintings, whatever, were kind of androgynous.
That's right.
Or Christ, I should say. And it's only with Constantine, where it suddenly becomes the religion of the Roman Empire, that he gets a big beard and, you know, scowl. And
looks like a Roman senator.
Yeah, that's right. And then Mary, of course, is kind of pushed to the side and evoked as a sort of secondary...
being
well, yeah, and a kind
she
of consolation.
She has a quasi-goddessy status. Now that comes in. I was reading 1200s, 1300s. Mary gets her.
Well, she
comes back in a big way.
She does come back in a big way. That's right. And worship of Mary and so on. Which is odd in a sense because the actual Mary, if there was one, could have known nothing about Christianity. I mean, Christ himself knew very little about what Christianity
was. Yeah, it's like the Byronic, you know. It came after.
Yeah. So she was totally innocent of all this. Yep, she is St. Mary. And in fact, her husband, St. Joseph, and her mother is St. Anne. And what on earth did St. Anne know of all this?
Yeah. Yeah.
However, we shouldn't ask these questions. Very naughty of us. She was a worthy woman, al-Halid.
Worthy again.
That word worthy, you see how flexible it is, isn't it? And it can mean morally worthy, it can mean respectable in a bourgeois sense.
Pretty.
Yeah, it can be, exactly. Or with the knight, you know, bold and valiant. And whose bond as a church adorer had she had a fever? So, fine husband. And that was normal, by the way, you got married at the church door and then you entered the church for a little ceremony, but the actual marriage would take place at the church door.
Okay. Must be a lot cheaper than hiring the full church.
Well, I suppose so.
You get the church door price.
I suppose so, yes, that's right. Like a Las Vegas wedding. You know.
Yeah.
Like when Homer Simpson wakes up and he's married to a... That episode?
Actually, we weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons.
We weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's... Futurama. It was a thing. Like, I meet kids my age or people my age, and it's like either you were allowed or you weren't allowed. And it's a common thing at parties. Like, no, we weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons. Dad would say, "What rubbish? Turn it off." Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not rubbish at all.
Put back to the news. Things. Well, yes, satire, not their strong suit. And there's what, 200 seasons of it? So
yes,
we'll get round to it eventually.
It's on DVD.
Yeah, well, so no, I'm not familiar.
Oh, what a show.
Explain away.
Oh, it's just that one episode he goes to Las Vegas and he wakes up and he's married to a barmaid or something.
Ah, yes. Anyway. I'm familiar with the cliche.
That's right. Anyway. With Uten other companions.
Right, so she was a good little girl.
No. He says she had 5 husbands at the church door, but I'm not going to mention all the other company she had in her youth.
Oh.
With Uten.
Good honour.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But they're often there not to speak as no. But we don't need to talk about that now, just now. Because, of course, Jeff would be prudish. But yeah, exactly. It's taken the West 600 years to catch up with the wife of Bath here.
Mm.
But we no longer feel that...
I mean, her body count's actually probably quite low compared to people these days.
Well, that's right. That's right. And, of course, for most of those centuries, it was okay for a chap to spread his wild oats.
Mm.
Not
okay for a woman.
Yeah. Well, in Hamlet, Polonius speaks, you know, it's just the flashes of youth, he says, and if Laertes goes around fornicating like a donkey, it's just a flash of youth.
And yet Ophelia, lock her up!
She must keep close her chaste treasure
yeah.
to his unmastered opportunity. And what's interesting is that Shakespeare makes her aware of this double standard when she then lectures Laertes on sticking to the
true.
High path.
That's true.
It's rather clever. So, again, you see, these people aren't idiots. They can see what's going on. So, and Thrius had she been at Jerusalem.
That's a wow. That's good honour.
Incidentally, there's that little picture, manuscript picture from, I think, the Ellesmere. Can you see it? You see, she's got a rather prominent whip.
Yes.
She's kind of symbolic.
Yes, she does.
Yes. She doesn't really need that whip for her horse.
No. So just good on her.
Good on her. She's the woman in charge.
Okay, 3 times to Jerusalem, the big deal.
Oh, yeah.
You had to have money, you had to have means.
Stamina.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's she right. would be thrice holy.
Well, exactly.
She's a thrice palmer.
A thrice palmer, yes. A palmer, palmer, palmer.
Mm. She should maybe advise Guy on.
She should. She should. So actually, this little jaunt to Canterbury is nothing, really. Nothing at all.
Yeah, weekend away.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
She had a passed many a stranger stream, so she'd crossed many a foreign river. At Rome she had a been, and at Boulogne, in Galles at St. James, and at Cologne. So she's on to Rome, which of course makes a lot of sense. Boulogne.
I mean, at that point, the heart of law and medicine, yeah?
Well, that's right. Not so obvious a pilgrimage place. But, of course,
Educated lady place, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Santiago de Compostela in Galicia, which is at Galles and St. James, that is still one of the great pilgrimage sites.
What do you see there?
I think the knuckle bones of St. James.
Literally the knuckle bones?
Well, I'm guessing.
Okay. Because it's always the knuckle bones of St. Anthony is the joke. Right?
I don't know. But it's to do with St. James. St. James...
No.
Well, is St. James the greater or St. James the less? Oh.
No. Carry on. What's St. James's thing? I was reading about the other day.
He did write, of course... The Gospel of St. James. Not the Gospel of St. James, but the letter by St. James. By James.
Which is important because...
It's important because it stresses the importance of works in salvation.
No, there's something else that I'm forgetting. But carry on. James is important for something I was reading. Yeah.
Well, he was the brother of Christ.
Oh.
That's kind of
that
important.
Might be it.
Yeah.
Older or younger?
I don't know.
I'm far too interested in that.
Well, it can't be older, can it?
Because well, I was thinking that, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, of course, the Catholic Church...
I suppose if Mary's a virgin...
Well, they claim that she was always a virgin.
Also, James also.
Well, no.
Immaculate.
No, well...
sorry, too many. No,
I think in the Catholic Church, they don't always acknowledge that James is a brother of Christ, but he is in the Gospels a brother of Christ. Because the Catholic Church wanted to establish, not only was she Virgo in tacta, but she was Virgo in tacta in perpetuity.
Oh, still is.
Still is.
Not even having fun in heaven.
Nothing ever pop. Well, also, nothing can pop out. If nothing can pop in, nothing can pop out.
Ah.
So to speak.
How did Jesus get born? Right, whatever.
By a mystery and a miracle.
They didn't understand birth, did they?
Well...
They thought there was a trap door.
Perhaps he popped out of the belly button. I don't know. I really don't know. It's not a topic...
You can tell men we're in charge. That's all right. I'm saying. They're like, right. We'll make it work. And the women are going, what the fuck?
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Yes, it's not actually... You'd think the Gospels would make a point of explaining.
Yeah, okay.
But they don't. So
right, sorry, St. James. Yes.
St. James. So he's a biggie. And it was a famous one. You had to sort of pilgrimate? Pilgrimise? I don't know.
Walk.
right down into France and then right across the northern part of Spain.
So it's a fair jaunt.
Because it's the...
On Shanks's pony.
Yeah, it's the top left, that is to say north. Westernmost point of Spain.
Yeah, okay.
You've got a mental map there.
I do.
Good. Lots of people don't.
Oh, jeez.
Lots of Americans don't.
Well, nothing outside of America, don't you know that?
That's right. They think Africa is a country. And then she could have much of wandering be the wire. She knew lots about wandering off the beaten track. And of course...
Good for her. I want to be wife of Paul.
Yeah. And as we know, I mean, the point is, she's curious.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting town, this Jamaica. Why don't you just pop off and have a look at it? Oh, yes, that
is. Well, there's a little shop.
but you also know that...
Wandering has connotations.
It has, as in Spencer, it has definitely, and indeed in Dante. Mm.
No.
Mm. I found myself in dark wood where the right way was lost and all forgotten.
Silva scura.
Mm. Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita mi ritrovai per una selva oscura che la dritta via era smarrita. La dritta via, the straight way, of course, is what Paul talks about.
Mm.
Straight is the way and narrow the gate that leadeth to eternal life, and few there be who find it. So, but you see how this has resonances, but interesting resonances, because it's saying, yeah, so the solidly patriarchal reader can sneer at her here and say, oh yeah, you know, she's just morally
putting it about.
Yes, putting it about. One way to
but she's
demonstrating a kind of interesting human curiosity
and autonomy.
Yes, both of which are forbidden.
How dare.
I mean, this takes us right back to Eve. And to Adam, doesn't
well, yeah. She just was like, oh, talking snake.
Yes.
Little shop.
That's right.
What cheeses do they have in this town?
What happens if I press this button?
Yeah.
And again, I mean, we've seen it in Dante. Well, have we?
Yes, we have. We've seen what?
With Ulysses.
Oh, yeah.
A kind of ambivalent relation of Dante to this medieval... prohibition on curiosity, on curiositas, and a more modern kind of interest in the world and how it works.
Because the world changed in 1453 with two major publications.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, but this is way, I mean, Dante is way before that. 150 years before that. Well, something years. So
things would have been bubbling through, surely.
Well, but only among people like that, Dante and Petrarch and Chaucer, because it's you know, it is a kind of truth that people talk about, that great artists have the ability to. It's not that they can see the future in a spooky supernatural way, but that they're more attuned to.
They're watching.
And they're more attuned to developments and the way things are moving, rather than just being sort of stuck in it like a fish in a river and having not a clue about where you're going and what it's all about. They're up there with their periscopes. I don't know, my metaphor is getting a bit...
No, yeah, I'm with you. yeah, thinking.
So you can trace this from Dante to Spencer to Milton, that they are all poets, and they're aware of this Christian condemnation of curiosity, but they push against it.
Mm.
And Milton, the strongest of all, of course. I mean, Milton is kind of pro-science.
Mm.
And you're really meant to resent Raphael waggling his finger at him and saying, don't you worry about that. Like, you know.
Unless you're Stanley Fish. In which case you identify with Raphael.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. The worst kind of teacher, really.
Yeah, it's poor pedagogy.
Yes, very poor pedagogy. Yeah. So, again, we're postulating different audiences for this.
I used to kind of guffaw at reception theory, but there's something to it.
Oh, there's definitely something
to it.
Yes, absolutely. There's something to about every literary theory people come up with. They just try to totalize it into
everything.
Yes.
That's why I guffaw. It's like,
exactly.
Not one thing can explain it. And that's it. You talk about poets. They're poets, not philosophers, because philosophers are stuck in the one way of thinking. Poets are syncretizing. Yes. That's what we keep talking about.
Exactly.
Okay, she's wandering.
She's wandering. And then another random observation. Get to the Dwashe Suthli for the Saya.
I know, she got a few punch ups.
Well, no, it doesn't mean that you're missing a tooth. It means that your two front teeth are farther apart than is normal. That's to be called gap tooth.
Well, Dad used to tell me that meant I was going to be rich when I was little.
well, it means that you are sensual and power hungry.
Well, no. Never mind.
Well, according to medieval physiognomy.
Okay.
But clearly she is.
Yeah.
And all to the, more power to her elbow.
The sort of things that if you were reading this as a high school student, you just would never have the context to understand.
No,
So you'd apply some harebrained theory to it. Yeah.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've met people who have this sort of... It's kind of pronounced gap between those two front teeth.
Mm.
But it's not a missing tooth.
Mm. Okay.
And, of course, people paid attention to this because they believe right up to the middle of the 19th century that you could read a physiognomy and deduce character, which is kind of crazy.
Mm.
And there are certain writers who just... have a bar of it, like Jane Austen. She just ignores all that rubbish. But most of the others get sucked in. Any of the Brontes believed in it.
Yeah, Heathcliff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Upon an ambler easily, she said. I like that. An ambler is a slow horse. Yeah, a slow horse.
It's Latin ambulant, walking.
Ambulare, to walk,
yes. Yeah, yeah.
So an ambulance.
A walkulence.
Well, I suppose it's for the walking wounded, isn't it? But it's not really, because you actually put them in on stretchers. So I don't know quite how that confusion arose with...
Etymology is fantastic.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
you know the phrase solvitur ambulando? It's an old proverb. It means it can be solved by walking. What it means?
I'm a big believer.
Oh, me too. You've got a little mental problem. You go for a walk, and halfway around the walk... the solution appears to you.
Or you feel better about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Darwin used to classify problems as a one circuit of his garden problem, or a two circuit, or sometimes a three circuit garden.
Must have had a big garden.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Well, Darwin, yeah.
He was well off.
Yeah.
Just as well he was, because, he could afford to write science.
Yeah.
And government would have sponsored him.
So, what was it?
We're talking about the ambler. Sorry, we're talking about an ambler.
No, but the proverb?
Oh, solvitur ambulando.
Mm.
It is solved by walking.
Cool.
So, it's so true. it suggests, doesn't it, there's nothing frenetic about it because she's sort of totally in charge. That she just ambles along.
She does what she wants.
Yeah.
It's very apparent.
Exactly. That's exactly right. It is, she said. She's in control of it. "You wimpled well, and on her head and hat." So she's well wimpled. Wimple is the veil that comes down from the head.
Mm-hmm.
"And on her head and hat as broad as a buckler or a targe. And hat as broad as a shield."
Okay, oh.
So it's a kind of, it's giving her a kind of masculine, and non-masculine aggressiveness. It's not like a sword, but an ability
defensiveness
to
defensiveness as well.
Yeah, but an ability to defend herself.
Yeah.
It's not defensiveness in our modern sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she can look for, you know, she can stand up for herself.
Mm.
Ain't nobody going to push her around.
No. Yeah.
She don't take no shit from nobody.
Someone needs to do a book on these. Well, Phoebe, wife of Bar.
Yes, all of them have been hidden and squashed by centuries of patriarchal criticism.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Lady Macbeth, yeah.
Absolutely. And the same stories come out, you know, that they're neurotic and oppressed and...
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. She's sitting on this ambler, just sort of
that's how we
not are. Trotting, just ambling easily along at her own leisure, at her own pace. I think I notice how random these observations are, but the wise reader can make sense of the randomness.
And same with this defensiveness. He's just kind of like, oh, she's got a big hat.
Yes, exactly.
But no, there's a reason it looks like a shield. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. "And on her feet, on her feet, a pyre of spores sharper." Oh, a foot mantle about her hip is larger, so she's got large hips, childbearing hips, as they used to say. Good for her. "And on her feet, a pair of spurs, a sharp, sharp spurs."
Good.
So these
anti-rape mechanisms.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. "Don't mess with her," is basically what's coming through here.
And it's nice because, yeah, it's she doesn't need a man.
No.
She's just, yeah. No. Well, it shows that it was possible.
Yeah. But exactly, because she's economically independent with her weaving and cloth making.
She's autonomous. She's autonomous. Defended.
Yep.
By herself.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she's happy.
Yeah.
Mm. And
it's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible, yeah.
And people hated her for it.
Well, yes, exactly. You mean critics, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure people would have seen women like this even at the time and wanted to pull them down.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely, absolutely. In a later period, she might have been accused of witchcraft.
Yeah,
but of course, witchcraft isn't a medieval thing, really.
No,
it's very rare.
Late.
It's early modern. I think it's that crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So witchcraft.
Because it's James I. Yeah, James I writes the book.
Witchcraft wasn't a crime for most of Elizabeth's reign.
Yeah. Well, women. People had had enough of women by the end of Elizabeth.
Well, actually, it's quite fascinating.
And it was a papal bull, wasn't it? But no, yes, it was a papal bull about witchcraft and whether or not there could be witches. But then nobody touched it for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And then they finally were like, well, that's very helpful. Let's persecute some women.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
okay. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And... that's why you get in 17th century Jacobean drama, you get this kind of reaction. You get this upsurge of powerful, intelligent, dangerous women, which is quite fascinating.
Mm.
People like, you know, the Duchess of Malfi. I mean, she's not dangerous in a sense, but she's powerful and intelligent. And therefore, they try to squash her, her brothers.
Mm.
The White Devil, Vittoria Colonna, Cleopatra. There's so many. You know, Beatrice in Changeling.
Mm.
All of a sudden you get this upsurge of... And it's male anxiety about this clear example of female intelligence.
Yeah.
Potency. You know. What are we going to do? Everything's lost. The women are uprising. They'll be wanting equal wages next.
Yeah, well...
We won't get that for a while.
Yeah. The right to vote? Gosh.
Exactly. So it's quite an interesting period of literature for that very reason.
Hmm.
In a sense, Eve is part of that too, isn't she?
Yeah, you could do kind of a survey of women. Eve, yeah, Francesca.
Yeah.
Belphoebe, wife of Bath.
Well, yes, that too. Except that Spencer isn't anxious about it.
No, it's more, I'm also, yeah, you'd have different arguments, but like these yeah. women that are about challenging that very patriarchal yeah, view yeah, of yeah, the yeah, world. Yeah,
exactly. And either that upsets you and it makes you fearful, or it makes you delighted that, you know,
yeah.
common sense is coming back into the discourse.
Mm.
Or, you know, it could make you quite excited, you know.
Mm.
Powerful women, sexy. I mean, so it's quite a complicated sort of response that you get to these characters.
Mm. I'm wondering if this is a... You always think about what your decor will be, you know. And well, how to get it in the boxes.
This could be very interesting.
Yeah, it could be a good decor.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Good, couldn't it? Yeah. You even call it Weibermacht.
It would be quite a tour de force, though.
Oh, well.
You'd have to cover some ground.
You'd probably want to cut it down to the first half of the 17th century or something.
Well, hold on, that's
Spencer. That can't be that.
I mean, I suppose you can always do the thing where you pitch it to Decker and it's this huge, you know, and then you. Yeah. Make it realistic when you actually do it.
But you wouldn't want to leave out Spencer.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm always there as well.
You, yeah.
Not always there.
You will be. If you don't think we're going to turn you into some sort of portable Google. It's my turn with the Peter today.
In fellowship will could she laugh and carper, laugh and carper. So she was, you know, she liked to drink and a chat and a laugh with people, which is nice. She's not portrayed as being somehow kind of sour and controlling and so on. No, she just enjoys herself. Thanks. Yeah.
Mm.
Like so. But even that, you know, even like liking a nice glass of wine with your fellow gossips, as they were called, would be seen as problematic.
She's kind of feels like a Meryl Streepy figure.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
All of her characters, you know, they're very... Well, many of her characters are very sort of self-assured and confident and, you know?
Well, yeah, I agree.
Like she's a mature lady, but still quite beautiful.
But at ease with herself, at the Ambler. Because, you know, the ancient symbolism of horse and rider has...
Ah, of course.
Yeah, the two parts of the human.
And the fact that the horse is just kind of...
Is obedient and ambling along happily and...
Yeah, her will is very much in control of her. Yes. Like she is in control of her will, rather.
Yes. There's no...
She's not pricking on the plane.
No, she's not pricking on the plane.
She's not in a rush anywhere.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, that's a very... I mean, because it's such a naturalistic thing. People rode horses. But it's always available for that symbolic relation between intellect and body, or between, you know, will and reason. All these things. What fun.
Because,
You know, why mention it? I mean, for Jeff, it doesn't matter. Oh, look, she rides nicely on a Rambler.
But Jeffrey.
But Jeffrey.
He knows what's up.
Of remedies of love, she knew par chance. Remedies of love is interesting, isn't it? You know, these would be sort of drafts you could take, because sometimes being in love would be inconvenient or whatever. And so she's got a little bit of the wise woman of the village about her, too. Mm. That's why she... There's a...
Like Glauca.
Yeah.
It is literally Glauca who gives her the... Not Belphoebe, Britomart.
Yeah, a remedy of love.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Not Arthur, the other fella, T.
Oh, yes, yeah, him. Timaeus.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because it's actually not a bad... You know, if witchcraft is about harming your neighbours, maleficium, the wise woman cures her neighbour's ailment.
It's Jesus-y, honestly. She's about performing little miracles.
That's right.
Yeah,
but she knows what herbs and roots do what. Mm. You know, she's acquired that knowledge.
But it's the hatred of we need someone to blame when the baby dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For she could of that art the older dance. She knew. Of Remedies of Love, by the way, Remedies of Love, of course, recalls Ovid, Remedia Amoris. Which is quite a, it's a, maybe a hint that she kind of knows quite a lot too, as you were saying, you know, with her.
Oh, well, she's been to Bologna,
So she might have read Ovid. You know, any educated medieval person would have read Ovid.
Okay. In what context is it used in Ovid?
Oh, well, same sort of thing. You know,
okay.
Insofar as love is inconvenient, what do you do to get yourself out of love?
Mm.
But it's kind of more psychological than herbal.
Yes. CBT.
CBT, yes. Which does have...
I mean, that's what confession was.
Oh, I know. The trouble with CBT is it's got another meaning as an acronym.
Does it?
Mm.
Cognitive behaviour therapy.
Yeah.
And
cock and ball torture.
Okay, well, that's not... That's you.
Well, I hope not. So, the old dance, and it's a kind of familiar metaphor for sex, basically, isn't it? But also for love.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole matrimony being a kind of dance.
Mm.
Men and women holding hands as an image of matrimony. Sir Thomas Eliot, quoted in T.S. Eliot in Four Quartets. Yeah. So she's a great figure. She's sketched in there. She really gets fleshed out in her own prologue. And then her tale, which is actually much shorter than the prologue, and that's unique in the Canterbury Tales, is about... It's basically about the question that Freud famously asked, what do women want?
Which is kind to of be left alone.
Yeah, okay, exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
To be left alone. And what is the answer?
Well, the answer apparently is power. But in a sense...
Autonomy, though.
Autonomy, yes. Mm. Autonomy.
Power over themselves.
Yeah.
Which is to be left alone.
Yeah, autonomy looks like power if you're... Regarding, you know, if your dog stood on its hind legs and demanded, you know, 3 meals a day and you know,
all right, you unionized, good for you.
That's right. A request for autonomy, and for being treated on the same level as Christ taught, looks like a desire for power from those who are in power. Yeah, exactly. Just as it works in terms of sexism, it works in terms of racism, you know, in a colonial authority. People who want more representation, the colonized people,
and will be seen as... in a Marxist sense as well, yeah.
Any attempt to... That's why Gandhi was so brilliant, of course, because unlike your average revolutionary machine gun toting, you know, guerrilla leader...
Mm.
He made it quite clear that he wasn't interested in power.
Mm.
He was interested in moral suasion. And, you know, with the biggest army in the world, you can't do much about moral suasion. So, yeah, that's exactly right, isn't it? It's all a question of perspective.
It's a book.
It's a book.
Mm.
It's a book. Yeah. And the story, okay, so the story is about a young knight who rapes a girl.
Ah,
yeah,
again.
I'm afraid. And so he shows no recognition of women's autonomy and personhood and all that kind of stuff. So he's condemned to wander the world until he finds out what women want. And this is mixed.
That's a very Wandering Jew.
Yeah. So many.
Yeah, Cain. Yeah.
And then you throw into that the Loathly Lady. You know the Loathly Lady?
No.
Well, that's a folk tale about an ugly woman. And you
kiss her and you turn into a duck.
No. Sorry. She turns into a beautiful young maiden.
Ah, it's the frog.
Yeah, she it's a female frog.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So, and I forget the details now because it's maybe 50 years since I last read it. But somehow, or maybe it's part of the punishment, he's given the choice of marrying her or something like that. But he does, he marries her. And in a sense, this is obviously a valuing of women over and above their sexual attractiveness and reproductive ability and so on, purely as a person. Because if you marry a, you know, an elderly crone, you're just valuing her as a person. And then on their wedding night, he kisses her and she turns into...
And he went, whoa! Yes. Thank God!
Well, I know.
What if she'd stayed ugly? You
I know?
Know,
I know. But you see the point of all this is that what you're sort
you've
of saying...
You've got to have faith.
Well, you've got to have faith. But also, if you treat other people as people, it's not that they want power. They just want to be recognised.
Yeah.
And his kissing her...
Recognizes her as a human.
And she becomes...
Of value.
Yeah.
So,
it's...
So does she actually turn pretty, or is it just that he recognizes her as a person and her personhood is beautiful?
There's well, some, that's one way of reading it.
Yeah,
We'll have to.
We're going to have to.
Yeah. Faustus, then Wife of Bath, prologue and tale.
Then Macbeth. It's all right, we'll keep busy. Sylvie will be... 10.
Right. She'll be joining in.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun. We can do, yeah, in children's introduction to Shakespeare.
That's right. That's right.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Now, we've got the parson.
Ah.
And again, this word good, it's like worthy. It's such a lovely, flexible term which he explores, you know, a good wife.
Hmm.
A good wife, a good wife can mean so many things. A good man was there of religion.
And wife is also so generic. Like, there would have been lots of wives
yeah.
above. But she's a person. She's recognised as, like, an entity unto herself, which is pretty cool.
Even down to the gap teeth and the...
Yeah, anyway.
And he manages to make those things symbolic at the same time as they're marking
as
her
humanizing.
Off.
As humanising.
Yeah. Exactly. She's very clever. Mm. It's what great novelists do.
Mm. Well, yeah. Middlemarch.
Yeah. It's such a shame that because the language is slightly different, modern students are cut off from him. But they're not... I mean, I've taught Chaucer to first-year students. And yeah, you have to explain a lot.
They're intelligent. They're just misled.
Yeah, that's right.
and their concentration's been whacked.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I mean, we probably feel it as well, but... You know, something of the old days when you could, you know, not look at your phone for 6 hours. I remember that as a kid. Well, now...
Yes.
Yeah, so...
That's right.
If we could just figure out a way. Anyway.
So when we read this coming from Jeff, we don't know how to take it. A good man was there of religion. Because we've seen so many men of religion who he praises, like the monk and the... The summoner. We've had the summoner, haven't we?
And the abbess.
Yeah, the abbess. Exactly. Who were not good in any moral sense at all.
No.
Or didn't even understand what that might mean. So, we're open. We're sceptical. We're open. And was a poorer person of a tune.
We had the friar. That's right. Yes.
The friar
is another one, sorry.
Yeah, they're all of them.
Yeah.
They just want the core.
Mm.
This is why Dante's Inferno is full of clerics.
Mm.
Religious. And was a poorer person of a town, a poor parson of a town. That's a good sign.
Because
there are ways you could enrich yourself.
Strangely, ironically, because it's meant to be that if you are rich, you are chosen by God, and so on and so forth. But, you know, the poor are actually closer to God.
But not in this period. I mean, you're thinking... No.
Okay.
Oh, no, we're still here. We're still in this strong sense that blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the earth.
So if you're rich... Well, I guess that's why all the friars were giving up their...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the point is there's good rich.
Mm.
You're born... Sir Alice de Fontenoy.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I'm not Sir Alice. Lady Alice de Fontenoy.
Whatever. Yeah. I probably would go Sir. Honestly, fuck everyone. Yeah.
But there's also bad rich. You become wealthy by...
What are you? Inventing mousetraps, you always say.
Well, no. More. I mean, usury would be the worst thing.
Ah.
Like, lands you in Dante's hell.
Well, yeah.
But almost anything that doesn't involve, you know, tilling the good earth and getting corn and barley and... That is kind of sinful. It's kind of a smack
money
in the
out of money.
God. Money out of money.
Yeah.
Money out of things.
Yeah.
Bit dodgy.
Money out of people.
And in part of what the Renaissance did, part of the transformation, is to go from seeing that as essentially sinful and needing. That's why they all built chantries when they were approaching death.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, think of that famous Bosch painting, where you've got the rich man. He's in bed and he's surrounded by his bags of gold, which of course he can't take with him.
Bosch.
Hieronymus Bosch.
What else should I put in?
Oh.
Bosch dishwasher. Bosch painting.
Bosch painting.
Deathbed?
Deathbed.
This one? No. Well, there's that.
He's lying in bed and there's a little... Oh, there, I think that's it. Look, blow that up.
The death of the reprobate.
Yes. There's a little devil just coming... Oh. Damn thing. There we go.
I love it.
There's a little... Can we expect... Oh,
I can zoom in. Yeah, sorry,
oh,
Mac.
Of course it's a Mac. I keep forgetting. Primitive things. There's a little... Oh, you see the little devil's crawling in. And
I love it.
And there's one that's similar with the money bags. It's not quite this one.
What's going on here?
I know. Well, they're devils. You see, he does horrifying demons and
he
stuff.
He does.
Nightmare.
The ones of hell are terrifying.
You must keep him away from Sylvie, don't you?
All right, death of the reprobate, and then vision of hell. That's what I was thinking of. Death of the miser.
Yeah, death of the miser. That's brilliant. Well done. That's it. Ah, oh, now can you see death coming around the corner with his with his arrow? And there's all his gold and silver. And an angel is pointing up to this light coming in at
Have
the window.
Have you considered?
Yes, exactly.
You've got a moment.
That's right. But no, he's
what's
like
this little babushka rat.
Oh, well, again, it's another devil. The devils are coming. It's a bit like the end of Faustus, you know.
I love it.
Mm. And see that little tail sticking out under the bed? It's horrible.
Yeah, that's great.
He's one of my favourite painters, Bosch. He's just bonkers.
Very clever.
Clever, but so clever. Yeah.
Fun. Death of the Miser, Death of the Reprobate. How many deaths does he do?
Quite a few.
Hmm. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, so. He was a poor person of a tune, poor parson. But rich he was of holy thought and work. Now, Chaucer is forced to strain his narrative devices here because Jeff probably wouldn't see a lot of what is in this portrait.
Mm.
But that's okay, you know. You've got to get a cut in some slack.
It's only
got to
wait 700 years and we'll come along.
But I mean, the point is that Jeff wouldn't have produced this portrait, I think, quite in this way.
Yeah, okay.
Because he wouldn't have seen the value of what he's describing and praising.
Mm.
He tends to go for externalities, prettiness, jewels,
gap teeth. Yeah,
that's right. He was also a learned man, a clerk, and again, he values learning. Obviously, he values learning. That Christ's gospel truly would preach. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Christ's gospel truly would preach.
Yeah, that's funny because it implies an untrue preaching,
yeah,
which everyone is aware of.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And you know, as we've been saying, at the heart of Christ's gospel is an ethical message, which almost invariably gets overlooked or blurred. Since Christianity is so often engaged as a way of
control.
Othering, as we say nowadays, some lot, the Jews, the blacks in Southern America, whoever it happens to be, they're the outsiders.
Women,
absolutely.
Mm. It's girls, gays, and theys.
And theys?
Girls, gays, and theys is the phrase. It's like you come into the club and you're like, what's up, girls, gays, and theys? No men. Oh, no, you know. But that's who they're othering, as in people whose pronouns are theys.
Yes, yes. Oh, theys, yeah. Theys. Yeah, they are.
Girls, gays, and theys.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's exactly
the
it.
The church.
That's right. And it's been built as a mechanism for justifying that over the centuries, which is kind of insane. On what earth would Christ, if you dug him up and asked, well, dug him up, but I mean...
Well, I mean, how many foreskins are there around of Christ?
Oh, 16 or so in
Italy. Yeah, you could ask any of them. Surely some of the mysticism remains.
Perhaps he had an unusual anatomy.
Ah. It's spun.
It's not, yes,
oh,
it's
we're
fun.
Terrible. Carry on. We get to hell and Dante's like, we had to invent a new one.
Yeah.
Wave to Angie.
So, where were we?
Truly would preach.
Oh, truly, yes, exactly. Now, he doesn't specify what that means exactly, but you can work it out from what follows, in that he has a deep understanding of the notion of charity. Charity in that more traditional sense, not the modern kind of cold.
Yeah, give $50 to fire relief.
Yeah, that's right.
Rather than help your neighbour.
To salve your conscience, yeah. But rather going up, charity's an active thing. You go and bind somebody's wounds and you give 30 pieces of gold to the innkeeper. And that
you
kind of
actively
thing.
Help within
you
your
actively
community.
You actively help.
Yeah.
You don't just press a button saying, give now.
Yeah. Or, yeah, save a child in Africa. Give now. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's a weird... Yeah.
It is weird. And so much of that is scam anyway. You know, 90% goes on administration costs. Whatever.
Yeah.
So... His passions devoutly well teach, benign he was and wonder diligent. So his devoutly he would teach his parishioners, that's the word I want.
Yes.
teach him about, yes, about morality and about salvation and things like that. Benign he was and wonder diligent. So he was benign and very hard working for his parish, and then adversité full patient. So when things went wrong, he didn't curse and swear, he was patient, as of course is a proper Christian attitude.
Mm-hmm. You gotta have faith.
You gotta have faith. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that song, You Gotta Have Skin?
I was thinking, you gotta have faith.
Oh, you gotta have skin. Helps keep your insides in.
Weird, different wavelengths.
I think so.
I also have the Tigger song stuck in my head.
The Tigger song?
Because I was singing to Sylvie.
Oh.
The wonderful thing about Tiggers is I'm the only one. Oh. You don't hear that one?
No, I don't.
It's one of the Winnie the Pooh songs.
Yeah, but do you know the
Winnie
Anxious
the
Pooh song?
Pooh. No, Anxious Pooh.
Mm. 3 cheers for Pooh. For who? For Pooh. Why? What did he do? I thought you knew. He saved his friend from a wetting. 3 cheers for Bear. For where? For Bear. He couldn't swim, but he rescued him. He rescued who? Oh, listen, do. I'm talking of Pooh. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting. Well, Pooh was a bear of enormous brain. Just say that again. Of enormous brain. Of enormous what? Well, he ate a lot. And I don't know if he could swim or not, but he managed to float in a sort of pot. In a sort of what? Well, in a sort of boat. In a sort of what? Well, a sort of pot. So now let's give him 3 hearty cheers. So now let's give him 3 hearty witches and hope he'll be with us for years and years and grow in health and wisdom and riches. 3 cheers for Pooh. For who? For Pooh. 3 cheers for Bear. For where? For Bear. 3 cheers for the wonderful Winnie the Pooh. Just tell me, somebody, what did he do?
I didn't know that one.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's not and in any of the movies, I don't think.
It's a psychomachia.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of celebratory self and the kind of nervous... this modern word, what's it called?
Anxiety?
Well, no. That's kind of modern. But no, the sense that you don't deserve the place you have, that you're unworthy.
Imposter syndrome.
That's right. It's a song about imposter syndrome. It's brilliant. Utterly brilliant.
Sophie would love it. She loves Winnie the Pooh. Bouncing.
Oh, really?
Winnie the Pooh. Yeah.
Well, I must.
Yeah. At some point.
At some point. Well, it's just time. I've got plenty of time.
Cool.
Okay, so an inversite full patient and switch he was proved after see this proved meaning he was tested and shown to be patient.
Hmm.
It wasn't just a claim he makes, but you know, something he's been through.
Proved, like you prove something, you put it through something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What an interesting word.
Well, you like proof of a pudding.
Yeah. Mm. Well, proof is in the pudding because
yeah. And if you're making a sponge cake, you prove it with a fork. You stick the fork in.
And that's what that's called.
It's called proving.
Sticking. There's words for everything.
Yeah,
there's words
for everything. Yes, that's right.
Damn.
That's right. But in that, there's a sort of rather unpleasant joke in To His Coy Mistress where he talks about...
Oh, dear.
Proving her virginity.
Yes.
Sticking something in, yeah.
Of course, that's ruined again.
Well, no, it's deliberately unpleasant.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to shock her into a sense of reality.
Mm.
She's living in a kind of courtly love world where things can go on forever because it's a game.
Mm.
Games can be prolonged indefinitely with no consequences. And he's saying, yeah, there are consequences.
Mm.
Like your limbs start falling off, you know, and your hair falls out.
Mm.
And maybe we better do something about it before that happens.
Yeah.
So it's not gratuitous.
Okay, good.
But rather would he yeven out of doot into his poor apparitions a boot of his offering and ache of his substance. So he'd actually give to the poorer ones from his tithes, his what he earns.
A man of Ross, not quite the same because obviously he had big property and you know whatever, but same kind of.
That's right.
It starts with M. Magnanimity.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. But also just Christian charity.
Mm.
He could in little thing have sufficiency. You know, didn't need a lot.
Mm.
No, I mean, nobody needs a lot, but as King Lear says, reason not the need, our basest beggars are in their poorest things superfluous. Because what we need, in a weird way, is status.
Mm.
So it's just not enough to have food and drink and a roof.
Mm.
You need...
And every level of status you get, you want a higher level of status.
Yes, yes. You've got your iPhone 13, but Bill has an iPhone 15.
Yes, yeah.
So this is almost a setting forth, a positive setting forth of the underlying ideals of Christianity. But as we were saying earlier, these ethical ideas of Christianity are totally admirable and could be applied to anybody. Yeah.
Hmm.
They're not really religious in nature.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. They are a kind of. And in fact, you know, the whole idea of the golden rule,
mm-hmm.
which is crudely suggested as do unto others as you would have them do unto you, although probably should be, don't do unto others anything you wouldn't want them to do unto you.
Treat others as you want to be treated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, which is kind of, again, it's almost ethical common sense, isn't it?
But until someone's screaming at you because their popcorn was stale, or whatever it is,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you think it's common sense, and then.
But then, isn't this exactly what Spencer described as courtesy in the last book?
Well, and courtesy is such a better way of putting it than sort of this Christian framework. Like,
Be
courteous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Treat others as humans.
Yes. And you could be anything. You could be a tribesman from the Congo.
Human.
Courtesy. Well, yeah, courtesy is still an ideal. In fact, I'm sorry, this is irrelevant.
Carry on.
Why am I saying that? You can always edit, can't you?
Yes.
But you think about the Fairy Queen, it begins with the most narrowly Christian kind of virtue that has no relevance to anything else, and ends with the least narrowly, and moves through more and more humane notions of virtue, temperance, friendship, love, courtesy.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's kind of like a widening sphere.
It's a
beautifully constructed poem.
But it's humanist.
Yes, exactly. It begins in Christianity and ends in humanism.
And it slowly takes your thinking there.
Yes, exactly. Leads you gently by the hand.
Delicately.
Through the dark wood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Spencer is your Palmer.
Well, I think that's how he thought of himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't need a Dante Virgil relationship. He just, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. What fun. See, it all hangs together.
You have to read the full thing, which no one's...
Yeah. You do. Or listen to our podcast.
Well, yes.
Okay. Weed was his parish and hooses fair asunder. So he's got a big parish, and the houses are quite separated. It's not like some little clustered village.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, he trudges between them to do his ministrations. Notice, by the way, as we read, how un-Jeff-like this is. It's not just that he seems to understand the value of what he's talking about, but that we've lost, just temporarily, that random sort of birds, you know, a bird's eye goes, boop, 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 boop. It's ordered, it's sensible, it proceeds in kind of logical ways. So you've got to imagine that Jeff is off that day and he asks his friend Bill, could you write the bit about the parson? I can't do it. If you want to, otherwise you could just ignore the discrepancy.
Yeah, bizarre. Okay.
Well, there's no other way to do it, is it? Because if Jeff wrote about the parson, you couldn't take his evaluation seriously.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Jeffrey intervening.
Yeah, that's right. But he ne left a gnat for rain nor thunder in sickness nor in mischief to visit. So he didn't leave out even for rain and thunder, or if he was sick or in trouble. Nonetheless, he visited the fairest in his parish, much and little, the farthest in his parish, much, great and small, upon his feet and in his hand a staff. So he's like a pilgrim. You know, the pilgrims had staffs, didn't they?
And it would seem like it's really juxtaposed with the wife of Bath, but we're now kind of getting into people who are just kind of autonomous and take power into their own hands. Like, he's not a friar, she's not an abbess. They're not manipulating power structures by climbing the corporate ladder of religion.
They're
just doing what they can with their means in a way that, you know, Geoffrey is approving of. So I guess you kind of juxtapose the two, but in fact they're very similar.
Well, a patriarchal reading would want to juxtapose.
Yeah,
them.
You need to be a person of town, not wife of Bath. You know.
Well, yeah, and also, of course, she doesn't seem to take religion with quite the same degree of seriousness.
Mm.
But
she does, because she's still, yeah, she's learned and yeah.
But the point is, I think, and this does make a big difference, is that they both have a kind of autonomy. If you think about sin, sin is traditionally a kind of slavery.
Mm.
You know, that's why there's that whole motif of Moses leading the chosen people out of the land of slavery in Egypt to the promised land, being a type of Christ leading. Because you're a slave to sin. If God doesn't intervene, you're going to be toiling away at the same old sin. And then when you die, you'll be in hell toiling away at the same old sin.
Mm-hmm.
Only God can liberate you from that. In Christianity or in Catholicism or in Calvinism or anything in between. But the point here is that because of this, all those sinful characters, all those grifters, like the monk and the friar, and all of them, they're all in thrall to sin. They want gold and power, and they're just kind of toiling away.
And therefore never denying happy. That because they're in this this role, this job,
and it imprisons them. They can't see beyond it, which means that they're never done, because sin never brings you to a destination.
Yes,
it's always a thrusting on.
Yes,
I want more, I want a bigger house, I want two swimming pools, I want a camel.
And unfortunately, we suffer from the sin of curiositas, which isn't too bad.
No.
It's you one just of want the more books.
That's right. More books, more knowledge, more learning.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I'm not saying the clerk is you know, gladly what he learn and gladly teach. He too is.
But part of it is the teaching. Yes. Know, learning and teaching, learning and teaching. Yeah, learning and teaching. You're not just it's a miserly, you know, yes, keeping it up
you're
not
hoarding it. You're yeah, spreading it about.
Which is what Faustus is all about.
Yeah.
It's man.
You never see him teaching anybody, do we?
No. Not passing it on to his postgrads.
No, that's right. He just shows them conjuring tricks.
But then you can also do too much teaching and not enough learning. We see that all the time as well, you know.
Well,
yeah
that's
because,
true.
Yeah.
But the point I was
sorry, yes,
no, correct. No. The point I was lumbering towards is that they're like each other, these two, in that they're both kind of contented. They've achieved some sort of autonomy, selfhood, meaningful relation to the universe, something like that. That means they're not striving. Hence you're on an ambler easily, she said. All the others are constantly grasping and getting and more, you know, it's never enough. And the wife of Bath, not really. She's just ambling along.
What's above the Oracle of Delphi, the gates of the Oracle of Delphi?
Know thyself?
Yeah.
And nothing in excess.
Nothing in excess. And, yeah, know thyself.
Yeah, know thyself. Exactly.
It's kind of, they know themselves.
Yeah, they know themselves.
And they have
and they're comfortable.
Spent the time learning to know themselves rather than denying themselves.
Yes.
That's
exactly right.
Or trying to avoid something and then ironically just keep faltering back into it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And persistence in sin always involves a lack of self-knowledge and a refusal to gaze into the pit of yourself.
Disorderly desire.
Yeah. And that's you know, the function of the thing that gets you out of all this is, of course, the sacrament of penance, which involves confession. And confession means not just fessing up to what you did last Tuesday to the cat, you know.
No, working but, through it, why you did it.
Yeah,
what exactly. You should do next time.
But also, to confess, you must break down that resistance of the proud self to admitting it's wrong.
Yeah.
So you've got to somehow perform this kind of surgery in yourself. You've got to dive into yourself to understand yourself.
That's interesting because modern society is all about justification. And, you know, the apology videos are really just justifications, not recognition that what you did was wrong.
Yes, I'm sorry if you snowflakes were offended by my just remarks.
Yeah, basically.
Exactly. She doesn't have that, let's call it neuroticism.
Neither does he.
Yeah. Well, no, neither does he.
He's just...
Yeah, he's just doing his thing. So he's a wonderful character, really, the person. He's not impossible or inhuman. He's just a man conscientiously...
And again, it's the unhistoric axe. This has become a catchphrase for Nick and I, you know, Middlemarch. Unhistoric axe.
Oh, yes.
So much of human history.
Yes.
Is this. He's not going to be remembered for anything.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. This noble ensampler to his chef Piaf. So he's like, you know, his sheep. We're familiar with all the topos here. God is my shepherd, I shall not want.
I am sheep.
So a pastor is somebody who feeds sheep. Because pasture is land that feeds you.
Yes.
Pastor is a feeder.
Yeah.
And then
pater, father.
No. There's no real relation there. No.
Okay, it's got peas. Okay.
It's got peas.
I see a relation, damn it.
P's in Latin correspond to F's in English.
Yes.
So pater, father, ped, foot. Pastor, feed, I suppose.
Punya.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This noble ensampler to his shepherd. So it's not disparaging at all. It's a tender relation. The shepherd looks after the sheep.
Yeah.
The owner might shear them. But even then, you could see
shearing's good for sheep.
Shearing's good for sheep. They, in the summer, they don't want all that wool.
No, particularly in Australia. My God.
Yeah. So there's a kind of reciprocal relation between men and sheep. You know, you look after the sheep, and the sheep looks after you. That sounds a bit like a protection racket, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a nice vegan relationship, though. Yes. Sheep happy, you happy.
Yes.
Nobody gets eaten.
Nobody gets eaten. Exactly, by the bad wolf.
Mm.
Who is, of course, Satan. But first he rochte, and afterward he tochte. So first he did the thing, and then he taught about it.
Mm.
He didn't just come up with precepts, you know.
Mm.
Do no...
So he led by example.
Led by example. Exactly. Out of the gospel he the wordeth kochte. So in other words, that's what the gospel teaches you to do. And in this figure he added ek thereto the div gold roster, what shall Eirin do? So to this figure... Well,
carry on.
Well, this rhetorical figure, he adds another rhetorical figure, a metaphor of his own. If gold should rust, what the hell is iron going to do? So he, the priest, is corrupt. He can't expect the flock, who are iron, who are necessarily corruptible, not to corrupt too. So it's a nice
bad apple.
Yeah, sort of. But the point is that, you know, gold has much less excuse for rusting or corrupting, because in fact it's incorruptible.
Yeah.
As we know.
Yes, as we know.
Yeah. And he's gold, and it's not because he's got tickets on himself.
No, he's just...
He's a consecrated priest. He's an ordained priest.
Mm.
God has given him this status, which... Excuse me. Hiccups. Which leaves an indelible mark upon the soul.
Mm.
Which is why it's very hard to de-priestify somebody.
That's right.
Mm. I mean, the Pope manages it, but... I mean, marriage does the same. It leaves, for the Catholics, leaves an indelible mark upon the soul, which is why they don't like divorce. But you can nullify it if it wasn't consummated. For if a priest be fool, if a priest be foul, on whom we truste, no wonder is a lewd man to ruste.
Mm.
It's a lewd man is an unlearned man. Okay. It's partly what he's passing on to them is knowledge.
Yeah.
Understanding. They can't read. And they can't read the Bible, even if they can read, because it's in Latin. And sham it is if a priest tak cape. And it's a great shame if a priest takes heed of these things. A shitten shepherd and a cleaner shape.
So he's fully pointing it out for what it is.
Yes.
It's all gone corrupt.
Yes.
Here's a nice metaphor, so you don't hang me.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely idea, isn't it? A shitten shepherd
yeah.
and a clean sheep.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's telling it like it is. This is not Jeff.
No, but it's quite forthright for that time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, because there were an awful lot of...
Shitting shepherds.
Yes. And, you know, by telling us what the priest doesn't do, he hints at what he might have done to enrich himself. Well, och the priest in sampler for to give be his cleanness, who that his shape shall live. So a priest ought to give example by his cleanness, his purity, his moral excellence, how his sheep should live. And then we get a list of things he doesn't do, which are covertly ways of explaining how he might be a shitten shepherd.
But isn't.
It's interesting, isn't it, that this is literature read, you know, to the court of Richard II. There's no embarrassment about the word shit here. It's not a sort of a dirty word. It's just a frank word.
Mm. Yeah, I like it.
Mm. Mm. He set and that is benefice to hear... And let his ship encumber in the mere and ran to London unto St. Paul's to seeken him a chantry for souls. So he didn't hand out his benefices, his parish, to a vicar, to an underling, and left his sheep encumbered in the mire. We're carrying on with this kind of foulness, cleanness image, and ran to London unto St. Paul's, the big church in London, to look for a chantry for souls. A chantry was, remember we said earlier, if you're a rich man approaching death, I'll get a bunch of priests to sing for my soul, that'll do the trick.
Yep.
Possibly not.
It's like getting ChatGPT to write your essay for you.
Yeah, well, it is a bit, isn't it? Yes.
It's not going to save your soul, really, though.
No. It's because God is not deceived, apparently.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He sees all. Like Santa.
Yes.
He sees you when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake.
Exactly. Knows if you've been naughty and knows if you've been nice. But all these people singing for you, then isn't going to help much. But however, they did it, and the church didn't complain, because...
Money. Money's exactly. Money.
And so it was a cushy job. Because, you know, you don't have to look after parishioners.
Mm.
You don't have to heal the sick and, you know, do all that stuff and counsel people. And I'm terribly sorry your wife died, Mr. So-and-so. You just look after a bunch of priests singing endlessly.
Mm.
Probably boring, but, you know, a cushy number. But he didn't do that. Even though he could have. Or with a brotherhood to been withhold. But dwelt a brotherhood, a monastery, basically, rushing off to a monastery. You know,
oh, yes.
That's an easy life in a way, too. This was on the suspicions of the reformers that monks didn't do anything. They just...
Well, that kind of is the impression I'm starting to get from my History of Christianity book.
Well, yeah. The point is...
I get that it started off well.
Yeah.
Or with good intentions.
Well, the trouble is, I mean, we've talked about the origins of...
The hermits. Too many hermits.
Yeah, too many hermits. They clustered together. Hermit factories.
Hmm.
The trouble is, you see, to be a hermit... What you're doing being a hermit is what Adam should have been doing in the garden.
Quiet contemplation.
Yes, contemplating the 9 billion names of God. You know.
Good for him.
Good for him. Which is not laziness. It's, you know, it's a sort of exertion of a kind.
Hmm. Yeah, it's active
contemplation. It's active contemplation, yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not sitting around at home on maternity leave, you know, people say, aren't you bored? Active.
Yeah. I've understood this being bored thing. I mean, how stupid would you have to be to get bored?
Generally. Yeah, but then on maternity leave as well. Yes. Good luck. I'd love to be bored.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
He's not doing any of this stuff. Where were we?
Hermits.
Yeah. Oh, withhold, yes. But dwelt at home and kept well his fold. He stayed at home and looked after his flock, his fold. So that the wolf no mad it not miscarry.
That's the devil.
That's that devil. Always on the lookout. He was a shepherd and not a mercenary.
Which is a lovely callback.
Yes, exactly. And though he holy were and virtuous, he was to sinful men, not despitus. He wasn't contemptuous to sinful men, even though he's holy and virtuous. So he's not, you know, holier than thou.
It's a bloke you can have a beer with.
Yes, yes, exactly. He's not like Angelo in Measure for Measure, who kind of has contempt for everybody, who isn't as apparently virtuous as he is. Although we find out, of course, it's not quite the case. Neovis specia dangerous nedigna. He's not haughty or contemptuous in his speech to these people. Because of Spencer's idea of courtesy.
Courtesy.
Again, he's sort of enumerating. He's giving us a picture.
He's basically gone, okay, what's wrong with religion?
Yes.
How can we secularize it?
Yes, that's right.
In a more productive way.
That's right.
Practical.
And, you know, look at the contradictions. Because, yes, very often, thinking of yourself as virtuous and holy and righteous gives you the opportunity to be proud and contemptuous of others. And that, of course, is clearly against the central Christian ethic.
Yeah.
You know, it's the biggie sin. It's number one, numero uno.
Pride.
So, in some sense, all you need to do to be a good parson here is entirely about having a good heart. It's about thinking a bit.
Yeah.
About spotting these contradictions.
And finding ways to mend them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what he's pointing at. It's the contradictions.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. But they're not inevitable. This is the point. They're only there because they're convenient. I mean, the people don't notice them if they're convenient. Like, for example, the fact that Christian churches in southern states, like Southern Baptists, you know.
Oh, yes. All the crazies. Well, the mega churches.
Yeah, well, all that stuff. But even going back to the 19th century, they were all very happy with slavery. Now, the Old Testament is happy with slavery, yes. too. But we're supposed to have got past the Old Testament.
We are.
And anything more obviously against the central ethic of Christianity than slavery, you can't even imagine.
Mm. Because it's not just slavery, it's violence and denying them their humanity. Yeah. And there's so many things that went into it. You know?
Yes, exactly.
Murder. Yeah.
But the essential thing is treating them as objects and not as subjects.
And making money out of, human labour, human suffering.
Human misery.
Yeah.
This is exactly right. And so by what kind of mental gymnastics do you reconcile that with?
And we kind of have it again today. Not obviously the same, but
we do.
The way the workforce is, like Amazon prison workforces, like slavery is still around. It's just legalised.
Yeah.
Well,
that's right.
And you deny people their identity and their humanity, as Amazon does.
But even if you don't go to slavery, I mean, you know, just the ordinary kind of common garden racism.
Oh, yes.
You know, Donald Trump is hailed as a kind of saviour by the fundamentalist right.
Oh, God.
There's a billboard that says, and the word was made flesh.
Oh, no! He's the worst kind of flesh. Oh, look at him, he's all jowly.
Know.
Oh.
So I put that on Facebook.
I missed that.
and I said, it must have been a four-letter word.
And did you get hate?
No.
No?
Well, I suppose. I don't get read by the kind of people who...
Yeah? Gosh. Good grief.
Horrible, most horrible. Anyway, I don't think any Trumpsters are going to be listening to this podcast.
I don't think so. No.
You need, I mean, as soon as you start to expand your mind, all this nonsense must fall apart. Like a house of cards.
Well, yeah.
Anyway. But in his teaching, discreet and benign. So he was benign and prudent, civil, courteous. All these things in his speech. He just tries to show them where they've gone wrong. to drown folk be to heaven be fairness. To draw folk to heaven by fairness, by equity, by showing them the beauty of right behaviour, that kind of thing. Obviously, he's got a more Christ-like gospel of works. Because Christ only ever mentions good
works.
That's all he talks about. And it's only St. Paul he starts banging on about faith.
Ah.
You know?
It's a lot to answer for.
Well, yeah, he does. I don't deny it. It's just not everything that's pinned on him is
accurate. Okay.
Yeah. He wasn't quite such a foul misogynist as it became convenient to portray him for the later church.
It was easy to sell World Temples.
Oh,
it's not
easy.
Us.
Yeah.
It's not us.
That's
we wouldn't
right.
do that.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yes. Begodding Temple, this was his business. It's his business. What keeps him busy? It's his business. It's, you know, he's a priest. It's a nice
busyness.
Word there, isn't it? Busyness.
And then it got corrupted by capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, what a good word.
We still spell it busyness, and actually in Shakespeare, it's almost always three syllables.
Busyness. Instead of business.
Yes.
Which makes no sense.
No, well, exactly. But it denatures it so it can be reappropriated to mean something quite distinct. you know that old saying, business is business, where you're taking the...
Yeah,
the
money.
Denotation of business, which means transaction, human being, and then you are trying to fuse it with the connotation of business in our culture, which is that it is somehow value free.
Oops, that was late. Okay.
It's exactly like in the 80s, there were women who didn't like the idea of feminism one little bit. I know.
You don't want freedom?
No.
Stockholm syndrome, idiots.
When when they broke into the Bastille, July the 14th.
Yes. Some of the prisoners. Yes.
Some of the prisoners didn't want to leave.
Yeah. Well, there were only like 11 in there, weren't there?
It wasn't many,
but they were, oh, no, we're comfy, actually.
Yes.
I don't want the people to get me.
Yeah, and also, you know, out there, it's a big world.
We're getting fed here.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, these women formed a group called Women Who Want to Be Women.
That's back, though. Well, that's the TERF line. Yeah, okay, carry
but
on.
But you can see what it's doing. It's the same strategy. You take the denotation women, and in those days, women had a denotation. Now it's got less of a denotation. And you forced onto it the connotation of centuries of patriarchy. That is, docile, submissive, homekeeping, making a nice dinner for your hubby, and keeping his slippers by the fire. Yes. But you try to claim that the connotations are natural by superimposing them on the denotation, which is natural.
Yeah, I love
it. Or at least was natural then.
Hmm.
It's a clever strategy.
It is.
Yeah. It's a rhetorical strategy.
I was going to say, we lose understanding of rhetoric in schools now.
Yes, yeah. Because it helps you resist that kind of crap. But it were any person obstinate. If there were any person who was obstinate, isn't it nice that person and parson are similar words for Chaucer?
That's good.
He's just another person.
Yeah.
If anyone was obstinate, whatso he were, of hay or law, is that. So he's not a pushover. He's not just, you know. If you persist and get stubbornly in your mislife, your whoring and drinking and defying the parson, him would he snibben sharply for the nonce. I like that. First of all, you know, it doesn't matter if he's high or low estate, if he's a squire at the moment, because the priest still has a spiritual authority over the king.
Okay. Yep.
You know, even the king has to confess to a priest. It's an obligation. Snibben is lovely. Rebuke. It sounds like our snub, but it's a moral term.
Okay.
I think we should bring it back.
Snibben.
He snibbed. Yes. I had to snib my student.
No. It has a David Lodge kind of tinge.
Well, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, unfortunately. But there are lots of lovely medieval words that we should bring back. A betre presti true that no non is. Now, see this? That's exactly what Jeff says about everybody.
Jeff's back.
A better fish. No.
Well, look.
Maybe. But the thing is, after what's gone before, you read that entirely differently.
Ah, yes. Okay.
You don't read it in that sceptical way. You read what Jeff says. You read it as a true assertion.
It's a genuine assertion.
But, as you rightly point out, it's nicely easing us back into Jeff mode.
But, yeah.
To some extent. Hey, why did after no pomp and reverence the market him a specie of conscience? Actually, we don't go straight back into Jeff mode, because then we've got the ploughman who was...
We get, lulled in, I suppose.
Yes. Hey, waited after no pomp and reverence the market him a specie of conscience. A specie of conscience would be a kind of rationalising conscience that can...
Spicy conscience.
Yes, it's a spicy. It's spiced, like a spicy drink.
Yes.
So you can rationalise. Well, yeah, but it was just a little sin, and it was only a Tuesday, and you know, I didn't really mean it. And yeah,
I was tired.
That's right. Yeah, but Christus lured and his apostles 12 he talked, but first he followed it himself. And again,
and that's the big one. That's the big one. Final punchline.
Exactly. It's the third time we've been told that. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He leads by example.
And notice that almost all these other ones end, it's a bit like a bit of modern music that ends without a resolution, you know. They're just kind of random. Jeff just observes randomly and then stops into my random observation. Like he had a notebook. This has a structure, a movement, an arc, and it ends with a beautiful conclusion. Christus lo and his apostles 12, he talked, but first he followed it himself. So it's a completely different bit of writing.
I like it.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It is wonderful.
We should probably leave off there.